maroon. What an ignoramus.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
You're a subtle sensation.
Like you're under.
we go. Hey, poker fans. Sorry. Oops, wrong show. Hey, Dale the Truth fans. This is Rob, and I'm filling in for Dale for the next couple of weeks. In case you didn't know, Ed keeps talking about it all week long, so hopefully it's not a big surprise. But we're here with Thursday Night Truth, Dale's show about telling the truth and the Tea Party and everything else that's going on in Louisville and exposing the big machine for what it is here in our region, in our area. If you have any questions or comments, you can call in. Our call-in line over here at My View Matters Radio is 1-858-683-1326. That's 1-858-683-1326. And you'll have to be patient because I'm flying solo, and this is like, only the second time I've been punching buttons all by myself, so you'll have to be patient. Let's see. Last time we had a conversation, I forgot to tell you there wouldn't be a July 4th show because I was too busy having barbecue and enjoying all the good stuff. But one of the things that I like to talk about is, government and how to make things better and how to jiggle the machine to actually make it better, because I worked for, I worked for a lot of years inside of city government, and I can tell you that sometimes the machine just gets stuck. And these days of budget cuts and contracts and bridge building and traffic jams on 42, sometimes government just gets jammed up, and you need to figure out a way to do something other than hit 911 or call Metro Call to get things. So if you have any questions about how to get something going in Louisville, just give me a call. But I'd like to start the show by wrapping up some news items for the week that I like to hear. And Louisville is back in the top 10 in another area that I'm sure our founding fathers and great city leaders are just dying to talk about. And this story is courtesy of WHAS. And apparently Louisville is now number nine nationwide in bed bug complaints. The bed bug is back. You thought they were dead. You thought they were gone. But they're coming back, and they're coming back with a vengeance. And why are they coming back with a vengeance? Because government, the EPA, and every other, half a dozen other federal agencies I can't name off the top of my head, because they recreate themselves every year. Congress will kill one, and then another one will pop up. Regardless, the federal government has said that DDT and that whole class of chemicals that exterminators used to use to get those nasty little bed bugs that you wake up head to toe covered in bites, those days are over. So now all of a sudden in areas with moderate climates like Louisville, we have high humidity and a fairly mild climate. Well, guess what? Bed bugs are through the roof. And if you ask anybody at nursing homes, hospitals, and the hotel industry, it's through the roof. To disinfect mattresses and bed linens, sometimes they have to pull the sneaky little trick of sending their laundry out to an entirely different region so they can get access to chemicals that are a lot more effective. But as of right now, we're number nine with a 31% increase in bed bugs. Don't feel too bad, because Sacramento, California is number one, along with Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin. Las Vegas, so all those little critters and all those little Sin City hotel rooms, you go to, yes, they are critters and they are crawling on your bed, and they did not come from the prostitute and the hooker that was in the room before you. They come from the fact that your mattress is contaminated with the little bed mites. So that story, I always get a chuckle when I hear a story like that. The next story from Courier Journal is one that is of importance to me and my fellow brothers in arms from back in the day. Louisville's Metro Council is going to vote on police and fire contracts. It looks like police and firemen are going to get annual 2% pay raises for the next, apparently, 5 years. You think, wow, that's a lot. Well, it's not really a lot. It doesn't even keep up with inflation. And the city's also added in a provision here to save $2.5 million in health insurance over the next 5 years. I'm sure Obamacare has something to do with that. And the trick about these labor contracts is city government's going to get them, and because they're collective bargaining, whatever the city has agreed to is pretty much a done deal. I mean, they've done the math. They know what they can afford, and the Metro Council is just going to rubber stamp it. For 20 years, I never knew Metro Council or the Board of Aldermen or the county commissioners to ever reject a contract once it got out of the collective bargaining committee and signed off and ratified by their membership. Let's see. Firefighters are going to get a $1,000 bonus and then 2% pay raises for 4 years. And it's going to increase the cost for the city to another $6.4 million. Now, here's what, it's the biggest thing. If you look at the Metro government pie, if you consider all the cash that's brought in through all the funding sources, I think one of the things we all need to think about, and we all need to take a real good hard look at, and it's on any municipal, federal, state, federal budget, is they go, we're going to save all this money over the next so many years. Well, how can you increase a person, a group of individuals' salary, even with a cost of living, call it revenue neutral, and claim to be within your revenue streams in a down economy? It's impossible. It's, they play the games with the budget. They balance the numbers. The government calls it creative financing. Basically, they make the numbers work however which way they can, and then pass the buck on to the next guy. I mean, that's seriously. I mean, the police department's going to get an additional $20 million added to its budget over the next 5 years, but they claim, the city claims that there's no money for increased crime prevention. There's no money for overtime. There's no money for this. There's no money for that. But, the contracts keep on going up. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying take a very close look at what your representatives are voting on. I think the big change in this contract is LMPD officers have always, police officers in the city, for as long as I can remember, at least since the mid-80s, have always operated on a separate health plan. It's completely separate from the city government. And the concession that they made this time to make the numbers work is they're going to move the new officer, the new hires starting next year, into the city general health plan. Meaning, they're going to be lumped in with the rest of the city employees. And the police have always fought that because as their premiums were always cheaper because, as a whole, the insurance industry looks at public, first responders as a much more healthy block of individuals. And besides, if they get hurt, everything's covered under workman's comp. So they have a lower They have a lower actuarial rating as far as the insurance companies are concerned. They actually like to have first responders because they take care of themselves. They tend to be better, in better shape, and they age better, and they have fewer long-term illnesses, and a lot of that is because their accident rate, their accidents, and their on-duty injuries are covered by a really, really good workman's comp program. So, once again, we're going to bump up the remainder of the city employees, and you're talking a whole class of employee that runs from minimum wage garbage men all the way up to the mayor, who are all in the city's health plan, and it's actuarially much more expensive because there is, you know, there's a much wider group of individuals that are dropped in. So in order to help make the city's health plan a little cheaper over the years, they're slowly but surely going to be moving the police department into that health plan, which officers as they stand now and their families, you know, current officers won't see a change. However, it's the new hires who've already, we always pass it off on new hires. You know, when they changed the retirement plan, they grandfathered all the existing officers and said, if you were hired after this date, instead of 20 years, you're going to have to do 27 years to retire. Instead of, you know, supplemented insurance, you're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. New hires are going to have to take on this much more responsibility and this much more. The way I look, in another 5 years with all of these things finally kicking in, it's going to be extremely hard for our metro area to hire quality police officers and firefighters, because they are being lumped in, you know, with the bulk of city employees, and the competition with the other metro departments in the area, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Nashville, Knoxville, St. Louis, they all have better benefit plans as a whole for their city government than Louisville metro government does. So we're going to be, in 5 to 10 years, we're going to be, mark my words, we're going to be looking at stories about why is the quality of police officers so much less? Why are lawsuits through the roof? How come the city's paying out, you know, this many millions of dollars a year in false arrest charges or false arrest lawsuits? Well, six of one, half dozen the other. We saved $2.5 million by, you know, cutting the effective benefits. Well, you know, they got to look and see, you know, how's this going to balance out? Who knows? Hey, traffic, and for traffic folks, my pet peeve for the city my entire life growing up is finally begun its long, slow, painful road to vindication and absolution and correction. We've begun blasting in two different locations for our new bridges. Woohoo! You know, new bridges, new traffic patterns. I'll finally be able to get over to Party Cove by ground in like 15 minutes or less instead of, you know, the hour and a half drive around the city and up through downtown Louisville, New Albany, Clarksville, and then all the way out State Road, whatever, in Indiana to get to Utica. All those folks that work just on the other side of the river who have to drive all the way around, you know, you're wide open again. So we got new bridges coming, except for the people in Prospect are absolutely furious because their roads are jammed up every other day. Sorry, folks. Welcome to a growing city. Well, we're getting ready to take a real quick break just for a few minutes, just to pay some bills and get Ed back on the horn for his weekly kick for Crime Stoppers, which is a great program. But what I would like to remind everybody is if you have questions, comments, you don't like anything anybody on My View Matters Radio says, you can, or you have a comment about anything, swing by the website at LouisvillePolitics.com, click on the subscribe button, click on the comment to the article for the show, let us know. We might read it on the air if, you know, if it's politically, not politically correct, if it's family friendly, kind of. One of us will read it on the air for you. If you have something you want to say to everybody in there, just leave us a voicemail. You can do that on the website as well. If you want to support Louisville politics and independent media and what's going on in the city of Louisville and the metro area, feel free, swing by, subscribe. Please, click on some ads. That's how we can tell the advertisers, you know, these are our ratings, these are our demographics, this is how much the traffic we can send you. Visit the site, click some ads. You know, it's supposed to be free and open and independent. It's not Tea Party. It's not right wing. It's not left wing. It's First Amendment rights. It's your right to have an opinion and state it. So we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back, and we'll answer a call or two.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We've got the right to choose it. There ain't no way we
And we're back with My View Matters and Thursday Night Truth with Dale DeGillespie. And I'm not Dale DeGillespie. My name is Robert. And you're listening to My View Matters Radio, brought to you by LouisvillePolitics.com. We've got a couple of callers in queue, but I cannot find the button to bring them on. So we're going to move on here for a second while I hunt around and, well, just make a couple of announcements here and some really cool news items. It looks like Rick Pitino has been signing a whole bunch of pieces to the championship floor from the NCAA basketball championship this last winter. All the proceeds are going to go to, hold on, I forgot, the Pediatric Cancer Research Center at Cosair Children's Hospital. There's 1,000 pieces. He's signing 1,000 pieces of the hardwood floor, and they're going to be auctioning those off with bids starting at $500. So if you're looking for information on that, you can go to the Cosair Children's website and the University of Louisville Athletics website. It looks pretty cool. They've engraved them really nice with the national championship logo and U of L's image. And, you know, it's a pretty good deal. I bought an IU championship piece, a bit of floor a few years back, and it looks really cool hanging on my dad's wall. I don't know how he claimed it, but, you know, support cancer research, you know, for despite all the stuff and crap that Rick Pitino's gone through, if you've ever met the guy, you'll know he's one heck of a guy. He's a great competitor, one hell of a basketball coach, and as long as you don't lend him the keys to your restaurant, he's a great guy. Let's see, next bit of news. We got some new business coming into town, and the reason I want to talk about this is the president of the company I went to high school with, and the state government has announced, along with the mayor, that Angel's Envy Bourbon, it's always nice to know a guy who's in the bourbon business or the liquor business, will be moving 40 jobs into downtown Louisville into the $12 million restored portion of Distillery Commons Complex on Main Street. So it still sits near the Ohio River Bridge across from Slugger Field. It's going to be the latest in a series of new bourbon-related developments along the waterfront, which is called Whiskey Row. And I'd like to congratulate Wes and those guys for being part of the $265 million in bourbon-related state projects that the state's completed over the last few years. So, and if you haven't had Angel's Envy Bourbon, I highly recommend it. It's a free ad for Wes and Company. And, you know, I think you really like it, and the facility looks awesome. There'll be public tours and all that. It's a premium bourbon. It's some pretty good stuff. Oh, let's see. Oh, there's one thing. Let me see if I can get this caller on real quick. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Caller, are you on the air?
I'm here. How are you, Rob? This is Ed.
I'm doing pretty good, Ed. I thought that was you. I wanted to bring you on the air before we talked about these last two stories, man.
Okay.
The city is seeking ideas to revive the Louisville Gardens. We have 6,000 seats that have been pretty much abandoned downtown since the old ABA Louisville Cardinals left. And it's slowly but surely gone to grade. What do you think we need to do with that prime real estate in downtown Louisville?
I think Louisville needs to get out of the real estate business. I've got some major problems with that, and I also have some major problems with the whole way the Colonial Gardens is handled by the people in Louisville. It's fascinating. The fascinating thing is we continue subsidizing all of these places for no reason. The Louisville Gardens should be sold. It should be private. Nothing government should be related to it at all. It is a convention center. It's designed to make money. So let private practice do its job. We don't allow that in this city. We want our hand in everything. And if you need more proof of that, I tell you, it's really interesting because, you know, you've got all of these things going on with Louisville Gardens, Colonial Gardens,
all of this stuff that apparently is garden related. That's a joke, by the way. But when we look at everything, when we look at everything in play, what's the one thing they all have in common? They've been failed. They failed because of government interference. So I would like to see us get rid of Louisville Gardens. Quit trying
to play like we're doing.
Here's my idea.
Let me bounce this off of you. Give me about 45 seconds to throw this idea off of you.
It's your show, man. Take all the time.
For as long as I can remember, high school graduations have been held at Freedom Hall and Broadbent Arena in the rear.
Right, right.
Okay? And we have forced Jefferson County Public Schools, all the surrounding schools, with the exception of some Southern Indiana schools, have all held their high school graduations. We have given parking dollars, refreshment money, concession revenues, the rent from those, you know, renting those facilities for graduations. You know, during the busy season, they're pumping 2-3 graduations a day through those those facilities. Why not take this? I think they said $15-20 million. You know they're going to spend it one way or the other. $15-20 million. We're trying to train people to come back downtown. Well, you know, for the last 40 years, they've been training us all to go to the fairgrounds. Why not renovate Louisville Gardens with this money you know they're going to spend? Have Metro Council require that they hold their high school graduations downtown. Prove to these kids that going downtown is not an evil thing. Prove to these families that going downtown is not an evil thing. You'll want people to go downtown for family-related events. Have all the high school graduations and proms downtown. You got 6,000 vacant seats. You know, you renovate Louisville Gardens, you can do it. What do you think?
Well, you've got a major problem with that philosophy. You know, is it a good idea? Yeah, it's a good idea. But a lot of ideas are good, but the question is how do you get them to fruition? And when you talk about the Louisville Gardens, you talk about using the paths that you're describing. It sounds great in theory, except that's millions of dollars that the state is not going to get out of Louisville, and the state is going to balk at that. You're talking about the Democratic establishment here.
Have you been to Freedom Hall lately?
I have not been to Freedom Hall in a year.
They don't spend the money between truck pulls and rodeos to move the piles of manure out of the way. I went to a high school reunion, and we walked past, or not a high school reunion, a high school graduation just a month ago. We walked past a mountain of manure. Now, somebody, you know, some groundskeeper person had, you know, the foresight to at least cover it up.
Right.
But it was crap from all the barns piled up, and we had to park, and my family had to walk past a pile of manure to go to the most significant event in this young person's life. And they had all the kids around back standing around behind this pile of manure. Now, how much did the high school have to pay the state in order to, you know, it was probably $2,000, $3,000 just to turn the lights on in that place. It's nasty. It was hot. It was sweaty. It used to be the home of the Louisville Cardinals. Ever since they built Yum Center, it's fallen into disrepair. The state's not even spending money on it anymore.
Well, it was always in disrepair.
Why not spend that money downtown and help out the Cordish Group, and let's get 4th Street Live renovated, and let's get some people going downtown to some of those businesses?
Well, for starters, I don't think we need to help out the Cordish Group at all. I think we've done enough for the Cordish Group. I think we've went above and beyond to give the Cordish Group the tools that they need to be successful. And we're in a revenue-sharing program with the Cordish Group, and we've never gotten a dime from. The Cordish Group loses money hand over fist. That's why they rely on our local government subsidies to exist. You know, but you look at the big picture here. Freedom Hall has always been in disrepair to some degree or another, some sort of disarray. The question has become, where does the will and intent come to make it attractive? And it's the same question we have with Louisville Gardens. Our government is trying, it drives me nuts, because the government is trying to force feed us where, what, and when we can do anything. You know, let private business make the damn decisions that are going to promote private business. Let them enjoy the profits. Let them create the jobs. You know, we don't have that mentality here. We're never going to have that with the Democratic establishment. Now, you know, when you talk about Cordy's, when you talk about Louisville Gardens, look at how much money we have lost on those ventures of our tax dollars We've lost money on Cordish Group since the very beginning of 4th Street Live. And if you think about it, that whole corridor has been three or four different things in recent years before Cordish took it over, and none of them have ever been profitable. What's the one common thread that they all have in common? The Democratic powers that want to be refuse to do the right thing and let private business do its job. There is not one reason in any downtown area that you have a situation like the Cordish Group at 4th Street Live that they should be losing money, you know. But what are we doing to promote that? I'll tell you what we're doing to promote that. We're promoting racism. We're promoting sexism. We're promoting anything and everything we can. And that's a negative reflection on the Cordish Group who happens to control the property. When you have those kind of dynamics.
Well, here's another thing, and this is why I think renovating Louisville Gardens to be a public event center would work. One of the biggest complaints about Louisville is, you know, we've got Broadbent Arena. It's 2,500 seats. We've got Yum Center. How many seats is that, 20,000? There's nothing in the middle. There's absolutely nothing in the middle. We have some smaller, you know, we've got the Palace or whatnot, and we have Kentucky Theater. But those are relatively cozy, you know, event centers. You've got a 6,000 seat facility that can bring in bands. You know, my nephew plays in a band, and I asked him, why, you know, how come, you know, these mid-sized bands don't come in? He's like, there's no place for them to play. They either have to play at the Yum Center and charge out the yin-yang, you know, and that's why no concerts come to the Yum Center unless they're given all kinds of backdoor discounts.
Let's be real here, though. Let's be real here, okay? Because the opportunity has always been there for these bands and everywhere else to have other places to go. If you look at Coyotes, for example,
they closed down the city, forced Coyotes out of business to pump up 4th Street.
Exactly, because they didn't want competition, and that's the problem with the city. The city wants to control everything and not have competition for anything that they control. That's why you've got a situation where you've got 4th Street Live doesn't make any money. Everybody knows the game there. Everybody knows that half the places at 4th Street Live are nothing but drug havens, and the police and everybody else overlook it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and blow sunshine up their ass, because they do. You know, you mentioned police earlier and the contracts and the quality of police and how it's going to get worse in 10 years. We're already there. If you look at some of the things that half of these police are doing today, is an insult to the men in blue who had the integrity that came before them. And, you know, you can go to Dustin Hinkie and Brandon Wood. I'll throw names out there. I'm not shy. But when we look at this, think about that. That's what I'm talking about, the common thread. The city says, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to force everybody here. They're not going to have a choice but to go here because there's not going to be anything else here. Well, now you've taken away that free choice. You haven't given people any incentive to frequent your facilities. Then when you get down there, if you're an African-American and you go to 4th Street Live, you know, you're a black guy, you can't be here. So then you create this appearance of racism, whether it's true or not. You create this appearance of racism. In the meantime, you can go three blocks from 4th Street Live or four blocks from 4th Street Live and see the real problems with poverty and everything else in Louisville. We are not inclusive in Louisville because our government refuses to allow us to be inclusive, and they continue making boneheaded decisions to pad the pockets of their friends and buddies. Jerry Abramson and his wife, David Tandy, and a whole host of others have already proven that. Every one of these guys get paid from Cordish underneath the table. Steve Beshear is the same way. Stice and Harbison, his former law firm that his son works at now, he gets paid from Cordish to represent. So, you know, this is how they do this. This is all nothing but insider games and insider politics to take care of the status quo, but they fail to realize the status quo can't sustain the livability in Louisville. It's me and you and everybody like us that do. And we're not giving an incentive to change. They need to get government out of the way, let private business take over these entities, and they can pass or fail on their own merits. If, you know, a private business knows that if they don't make money, they're going to fail. Nobody goes into business to lose money. They go into business to make a profit. And in the meantime, while they're making that profit, they're creating jobs. So the problem
Louisville has, Ed, is there's no true innovation going on in this city as far as what makes us unique. We have every initiative, call it initiative. You know, the dictionary definition of initiative is a new idea. You know,
sure.
It's something new. But if you look at any initiative that they bring into this city, it's, well, we got the idea from this similar, you know, took the program from Memphis, or we took this program from New York, or we got the Galleria from Tokyo, or whatever. You know, when you don't have initiative in how to create things, you know, you and I are in our 40s, and our entire adult life has been how to get people downtown.
Sure.
Well, how you get people downtown is you have a safe and secure environment for them to come downtown and do stuff. Everything in this city has been designed to spread out. Well, mm-hmm. we have finally landlocked ourselves, and there's no more room to spread. And people are still, because we built a wall around the city with, you know, the Waterston Expressway effectively built a gigantic wall around downtown. And, mm-hmm. and they're trying to lock people into that. And every time I watch TV, it's like, oh, we got the idea from the waterfront park from San Antonio. Or we got the idea for this from that. Well, let's come up with a new idea. Let's say, let's rebuild a historic building and renovate it. You know, it's on the National Historical Register, the Louisville mm-hmm. Gardens is, because it was one of the original National Guard armories of the United States.
Well, that's another joke, too, but go ahead.
Well, you know, you got the building, and it cost, it's right next to all the other federal buildings downtown. It's right in the middle of Restaurant District. Build it, you know, renovate it into an event center. Make the kids come downtown. Make the families come downtown for graduations. You know, this is, you know, JCPS is part of government. You don't mm-hmm. give them an option because they will want to, because people don't want to go downtown. I've dealt with it my whole life when I was on the police department. People would freak out about anything west of where they lived. It's all relational, you know.
But see, that,
like,
that's,
oh, I don't want to go west of St. Matthews. I don't. Oh, my God.
Right. But that's actually
they're all evil.
What I'm saying. But that's reinforcing what I'm saying, too, Rob, because, you know, when you look at this, the city has intentionally created this divide based on race and economic disparity. You know, and that's why people won't go downtown. You're not going to overcome that until you become inclusive. When you talk about new ideas and fresh ideas and all these other things, that sounds great in theory, but you go to a contractor today who comes into Louisville with a great idea to do something. By the time Louisville puts in the daggone cost that they want so all their buddies get paid, all the graft, greed, and corruption and the cash payments they got to take under the table to do the job, it becomes to a point where it's unaffordable or they go out of business pretty quickly. They can't sustain it. You know, and that's because our government has always got their hands out, and that's why I'm saying we need to get them the hell out of the way. 4th Street Live would be immensely successful today. It would be immensely successful today if our city government hadn't put us on the line. If you look at it, let's look at this in reality. How many millions of dollars have we given the Cordish Group to stay at 4th Street Live? Now, the intention was they wanted to try to use a private way of doing business in a government level. We're going to go ahead and we're going to get into this profit-sharing agreement. So with Cordish Group, we're going to share in the profits. Private business does that, and occasionally you're successful. But it's not the government's place to do that. So they get into this profit-sharing agreement, so we sustain all the losses. If you look at the Yum Center, we're sustaining the losses there. The Yum Center doesn't turn a profit. They're raiding the maintenance funds and everything else just to keep the damn doors open and the lights on right now. If you look at the University of Louisville, they rent the Yum Center out to the University of Louisville as their primary tenant at a loss. You know how many thousands of dollars it takes just to open the doors and turn the lights on at the Yum Center for one event? And they built it in the wrong place.
You reminded me, you know I'm a big, huge New England Patriots fan. You know that, right?
Sure.
Well, there was an article on, it was on NFL.com, but it makes sense because Robert Kraft, is the owner of the Patriots, is not a big fan of public financing mm-hmm. for stadiums and arenas. Now, the Patriots, the second most profitable franchise in NFL. The mm-hmm. Dallas Cowboys are the most profitable by far. But both franchises have one thing in common, and they are the most profitable, they make the most money, they have the nicest facilities and the largest fan base, and they pay the most to their players. Not a dime of public money was spent on their stadiums, and how they did it was they controlled parking and they controlled concessions.
Right. And that was one of the biggest problems they
had. He is not a fan of any. He actually mentioned Kentucky Kingdom collapse in an article mm-hmm. I read. That's how I picked up on it. was because Kentucky Kingdom had, you know, he used Kentucky Kingdom as an example. They had no parking revenue. They had no concession revenue because the state took every dime.
Well, and so if you look at Kentucky Kingdom, they didn't just do that either. It's another great example of government interference destroying the economy. If you look at Kentucky Kingdom, Ed Hart owned Kentucky Kingdom, sold it to Six Flags. They lost their butt. They pulled tail, took a couple of the big rides with them so they could use them in other areas and make money. But Ed Hart came back and said, I can save this thing. I want this thing. I just need the same offers that you give everybody else. Give me the same deal, tax incentives or whatever. And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. Here's a guy who had already proven.
They're going to try to extort money out of Ed.
Well, they did extort money out of Ed. Now Ed goes in there. He's on the hook. He got Ed and Bruce Lunsford and a few others who are involved in the financing of this. Now they're putting up even more money to get this open. They go in there, find out it's in worse shape than they thought it was, so it's going to open later than they thought it would. But it's only that way because Steve Beshear and his cronies and the Democratic machine decided they were going to just sit there vacant, knowing that the only good thing that would come from the vacancy is that the property and the rise on it would be devalued, hoping that they could get rid of it and turn it into a parking lot so they could have more money. They control all the parking revenues. So, that's a good example, just another good example of a problem. And sadly, what really happens here is these idiots that go vote, they continue voting for this Democratic machine that has destroyed Louisville. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans are any better because I think it's the Unit Party, as you know. But what I am saying, we need to take a chance on somebody new. Some of us take that opportunity. I ran for mayor here back in 2006. You know, we've got to get the citizens of this community aware of how bad they have been treated, how bad they've been used and abused if we're going to move ahead. And we better start. Instead of spending $500 million on bridges, we should have been spending a few million dollars revitalizing West End and putting some jobs down there and giving people another way instead of the garbage that they've had to deal with all these years. That would be one of the first steps to prove and get rid of this racial divide that these city leaders continue throwing down our throats. But it's not going to happen. This division makes each one of them personally responsible and personally pocketing money that they're going to take back to their families and screw the rest of us. And that, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I blame black leadership for that as much as I do anybody, because your black leadership continues selling all this racist crap to these young kids and not showing them a better way. These young kids today haven't went through racism like people did back in the 60s, but unfortunately, our leaders continue living like they're back in the 60s, and that's why Louisville can't get ahead. That's why people don't want to go downtown, because they've got this misconception that everybody down there is black and they're out to kill you. That's something that's been bred in the behavior and the thought process of so many people in this town by the Democratic leadership who continues to screw them today. Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I like it. I like it when you get on a rant. It saves me from going on a rant. Well, I want to get you on one more rant because there's one more story I wanted to talk about before we swing back around and wrap it all up. Apparently, they're going to have the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce is having their annual summit at the Louisville Marriott on the 22nd, 23rd of July, and they're bringing in all the big shots to explain Kentucky's Obamacare, the health care exchange. And you'll be able to talk to Humana President and CEO Bruce Broussard. You're going to be able to talk to Norton Healthcare CEO Stephen A. Williams, CEO of Baptist Health. Let's see, that's Stephen Hansen, Ruth Binkley, Kentucky One Health, Michael Karp, Executive Vice President of Health Affairs for University of Kentucky. You'll be able to do all that and great and wonderful public service, and we're going to talk about our new health exchange and how it's going to help us and everything, but you're going to have to pay $149 to get it.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm glad you actually brought that up, Rob.
We're talking public policy. You know, with
I'm glad you brought that up.
CEOs are going to benefit or be impacted the most, and it's a two-day conference. But we're going to have to pay $149 to talk about, to find out what Obamacare is going to mean to Kentuckians. And if everything's been put on hold, why are we still pushing forward with sign-ups?
Well, here's the thing. That's actually going to fall apart because, you know, David Adams, he's one of the Tea Party leaders here in Kentucky, filed a lawsuit because Steve Beshear went ahead with executive order and tried to force these health care exchanges down the throats of Kentuckians. Well, he's already lost in court twice. Steve Beshear lost in court twice, not David Adams. David Adams challenged his ability to do that without state approval from our elected Congress, and he's lost twice. Well, interestingly enough, we have yet another update to the story. Today, David Adams got a letter from Attorney General Jack Conway, and he says that he will not represent Steve Beshear or Kentucky in this lawsuit anymore. So he's basically out. He says they've won, let it go, which is actually a big step because Conway is about as an insider as you can get. So Jack Conway can't even justify going ahead with the expense of trying to fight this situation. That should be very telling in itself. But it's interesting because there's another situation with the Obamacare mandates as well. These healthcare exchanges and stuff really can't go forward. We covered this the other night on my show, and what's really interesting with this is President Obama has decided that he has the authority, to sit there and make the decision to not enforce the employer mandate until at least 2015. Well, here's the thing, and this is why I continue ranting and raving about this. Obamacare was passed through Congress. Obama signed off on Obamacare.
So he's pushing it after this.
He is not.
This congressional
stopping.
Election cycle.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
He's pushing
he
it
is
back
not
until
stopping.
After the election cycle.
Yes, you betcha. He is not doing anything for the individual mandate. He is delaying the employer mandate. But the real question becomes, how does President Barack Obama have the authority without congressional approval to pick and choose what part of any law he can apply? Congress gave the Democrats everything that they wanted with Obamacare. Nancy Pelosi was public and said, we don't know what's in it until we pass it. You remember that? So we knew that this was going to be a farce in the very beginning. The liberals got what they wanted in this situation. Now Barack Obama says, you know what? I was wrong. I can't tell the whole world I was wrong, and I can't piss people off because of these elections coming up in 2014. So I'll delay the employer mandate so the employers will still elect Democrats, and then we'll just go ahead and screw them in 2015 like we were all along. But where does his authority come to do that? It's an all-or-nothing plan. If you're going to suspend Obamacare, for one, in America, we have equality and fairness. It's supposed to be guaranteed to all of us. So if you're going to suspend the employer mandate, then you have to suspend the entire bill that Obamacare got passed. That's it.
Well, Ed,
my understanding
of Obamacare or the National Health Care Act or whatever you want to call it is that if I'm uninsured, I can choose not to participate. But the fine, as written, is less than the cost of premiums for the year as set forth in the law, which, of course, will always, you know, that's just the baseline. It's always going to go
there
up.
There are a lot of variables to that. Go ahead.
So this is just my understanding. So when they tell me I have to subscribe because I'm a public, you know, I'm on the public dole as a public safety retired person. So when they tell me I have to go into Obamacare and I say, screw you, and they fine me and I'm going to go, you know, over here and find cheaper health insurance or do what, you know, everybody else I know of who's on a check does, just go to the emergency room. You know, so nobody's going to join it. Nobody's going to voluntarily pay premiums when they know all they have to do is go down to the emergency room enough times until they get put on a medical card. That's what they call it. They call it a card. I got a medical card. And then they get free insurance for essentially the rest of their life because I've never heard of the SSA, pulling somebody's disability, you know, especially some poor kid, and, you know, they're going to get on TV and yell and holler. So, I mean, what the advantages of it is it of me to sign up for Obamacare other than them taking my money from my retirement check?
Well, there's absolutely no advantage. You know, if the premiums are more than a $1,500 penalty, then you'd be a fool not to go ahead and take the penalty. Why not? I mean, it makes sense, right? You got to save money where you can. And what's really interesting, too, is Obamacare isn't even implemented yet, and the president is already asking for like 166% increase in, you know, the budget to handle Obamacare that they haven't even enforced yet. So they intentionally lied about the numbers. And it's really curious that you bring that up, because one of the other things that nobody's looking at here is, and this is why Obama dropped off the employer mandate. Because the employers, if you remember Darden Restaurants, for example, the home of Olive Gardens, and a lot of restaurants and a lot of other businesses around the country who now provide benefits for their employees, have found out that it's also cheaper for them to go ahead and pay the penalty than it is to insure their employees. But the law requires, if you have over 50 employees working full-time, that you're supposed to offer them health insurance. So what they've done is they're getting rid of their employees, full-time employees. They're making all their jobs part-time, so they're no longer required to hold to that standard. And then they're going to go ahead and if they want benefits, put them into the Obama health care exchange. It's not going to cost them nothing but a fine. But if you can pay a fine as an employer of $2,500 a year versus putting out $4,000 a year for health insurance, and you can make all of your employees part-time instead of full-time, that's a hell of a lot of money you save.
Well, that was a big fear when I was in high school in the early 80s, and I remember when this first came up, when the Ted Kennedy was talking about we need national health care, the first thing everybody said was we'll become a nation of temp workers. The union said we'll become a nation of temp workers. Guess what?
They were right.
It's on the Wall Street Journal last week. We are rapidly becoming a nation of temp workers, and Obamacare will strap a turbocharger onto that train.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Here in Louisville, we're already there. Here in Louisville, if you want to get a job, a simple job at any of the restaurant or, I'm sorry, any of the warehouses or anything else, and these are low-wage jobs, folks. We're talking $8, $9 an hour. If you want to get those jobs in a warehouse over at Riverport, you got to find out which temp agency they hire through and get hired through the temp agency. And then these guys, these employers, they skirt the law as well. It's pretty incredible how they get away with what they do legally there too. But ultimately, you're supposed to work in a temp agency, I believe it's for 12 weeks. They either have to make you full-time at that point or they have to let you go. Well, these employers are working some of these temp guys 9, 10, 11 months, and then as soon as they say something about full-time, oh, we don't need you anymore. It's an at-will state. They don't have to give you a reason. And that's what's being taken advantage of here. And that's why I don't like the right-to-work laws. One of the reasons I don't like the right-to-work laws that they keep trying to portray here, because you already have an at-will state. And this state and these employers in this state will use temp employees, and then they will lie, cheat, and steal. Lie, cheat, and steal for as long as they can before they get caught. Once they get caught having an employee on the payroll through a temp agency longer than they were supposed to, then that employee is losing their job through no fault of their own because the employer is going to have responsibility. And, of course, the employer doesn't have to worry about, having a hiring staff or human resources or anything else, so it's a little bit cheaper for them. But the worker has absolutely nothing, no recourse whatsoever.
The largest employer is Louisville, and I don't want to call out Ford, but let's just, because this is the most obvious example, we have two Ford truck plants right here in the city that are our single largest employer. If they buy rights, Ford out here at KTP, Kentucky Truck Plant, they have the place that does the modifications after the truck's been made, and it's called Manning. Manning, for all intents and purposes, the employees who work there, the 200 or 300 employees that work there, all say they work at Ford. They all say they work at Ford. Work for Ford.
Sure, but they're non-union workers.
Well, because it's easier to say but they're not Ford employees, and they're not drawing Ford benefits. They make as much as the Ford people do on an hourly basis, but they make as much
as the new hires at Ford do, because remember, Ford went to a two-tier wage system. The top tier is still making in the 20s an hour, and new hires only make about 15 an hour to start. So they've got that two-tier wage system, and that's company deal. That's more power to them. But when you talk about Ford too, Ford is actually is getting ready to go under the radar. There's a lot of things out there. A whistleblower lawsuit was just filed against Mayor Greg Fisher, and it involves Ford Motor Company and a whole host of others here locally. That's one of the stories we're working on at LouisvillePolitics.com. But it's the fascinating thing is that Ford itself is a union. So you think when you have a union, you've got some union protection, right? You really don't. Ford today doesn't honor their contract. Not that they ever did, but it's just miraculous because the unions used to at least try to make for it, honor their
contract.
Oh, like I
told you, contracts are only as good as the lawyer you can find to file the suit for you.
Oh, I agree. and that's a major
especially
problem. A lot of these Ford employees out there right now are so disgusted because their union isn't even doing their job. The UAW has went straight to hell. But that's the thing. Really, the employees today is where the problem is. It's hard to get good employees. I'll admit that freely. But we have to look at the employees' base just like we have to look at everything else, what's going on. When you're an employee and you've worked your butt off and you've done a great job and everything else, and your reward is at the end of 11 and a half weeks if your employer is legal, or, you know, at the end of 9 months because your employer got caught, you're going to be out on the street with no job through no fault of your own. That's a problem. We don't hold the employers responsible for what they are doing. And until we get to that mindset and get that problem fixed, you know, you're destroying your own work base intentionally so that you can create low-wage employees who finally have gotten so disgusted, where's their incentive to do a good job? They don't want to do a good job. They just want to draw a paycheck. You used to take pride in your work. You don't take pride anymore. You just draw a paycheck. And that's the saddest reality of all. The unions used to protect from that, and the unions don't do that anymore. You know, even the unionized workforce. That's why the unions are going out of business, and that's why so much less of our society today are unionized, because they realize the unions have become the same corporate conglomerate that the unions have spent their time railing against. So there is all kinds of societal things to look at here. But when it comes to that temp argument, in Louisville, we're there.
Yeah, we're an instant gratification society, and you know, and I have to admit, and I'll close off on this discussion because we're on overdrive, as you like to say. We're an instant gratification society, and when you're in a collective bargaining environment, like, you know, like I was, I remember, you know, and that created a bad name for myself, but I remember, you know, we're in the department, and everybody was talking about this great and wonderful contract we got, and me and my roommate were sitting here, you know, we're young officers, and we're looking at the contract, and it's a simple spreadsheet. We look at how much we would make under this contract, and we compared it to how much we'd make under the new contract. And everybody was talking about how great and wonderful it was, and we went, no. The city's agreeing to, retro pay on this contract, but we're going to end up losing money over the next 5 years. So we voted ourselves the worst contract because we were getting retro pay. Everybody got mad because the city took out taxes. And,
well, that's how they do it, though, Rob. It's that whole lump sum payment signing bonus. That's exactly what
it's
trying to do.
Oh, we're going to give you $1,500, and then people forget,
sure.
And they go, oh, I'm getting $1,500 back paycheck. Oh, awesome. We're going to pay off this and get a new couch, and then the city throws it in on top of your regular pay, and then they give it to you as a bonus, which throws it in the even higher tax bracket. Next thing you know, that $1,500 turns into $600.
Yep.
It's a nightmare. And then at the end of the year, you're in a higher tax bracket, and then you're paying more anyway,
right.
And they withhold more than next year. Nobody thinks a long-term.
Well, it's always fascinating to me because that's one thing that a lot of people don't gripe about. We talk about the IRS, we talk about taxes and everything else, but if your employer gives you a bonus of any kind, they consider it unearned income. That's why it's taxed at the higher rate. If you get, if you put in overtime, they tax it at a higher rate. You know, it throws you into a different tax bracket. There are so many fallacies to these so-called bonuses and everything else. Now, if I've got an employer who gives me a bonus because I've done a good job and he has made money, how can that not be earned income? Why would that be taxed at a higher rate called unearned income? If my employer offers me 2 weeks vacation to rest because I've worked hard all year, why is that taxed as unearned income? I've never understood any of that, and nobody will ask or answer that question. The government gets away with it. It's just a way for the government to do it. And, of course, they take all those extra taxes, but as you said, puts you in a higher tax bracket, so now you're screwed anyway. So I don't know.
Oh, well, the IRS has made legal what was once illegal. You remember Chinese overtime? You remember the term Chinese overtime?
Yeah, I do. Explain to your listeners, though, they may not.
Where you made less as you work more hours? Well, the IRS has done that because the more hours you work, the less you make effectively because eventually, because your tax rate keeps going up.
Right.
And good luck getting that back at the end of the year. For one paycheck, you work double hours for whatever reason. You go from a 40-hour week to an 80-hour week for one check, and you get knocked up two or three, you know, just for that one. They don't take into account the whole year. They withhold at the highest possible rate. So, like with me in my former job, if I worked 10 hours overtime for that week, I didn't work any more overtime. I couldn't get any – we had so much overtime money to give out, people were turning it down because they knew if they went past 10 hours, they were going into a new tax bracket.
Yep.
And once you did that, you know, you're not making overtime, you're working straight time.
Exactly.
And
you're not, well, and it's not just working straight time. You're working less than straight time in many cases, depending on your hours. You know, I did that. When I first went out to Ford Motor Company, you know, I went ahead and worked all the overtime I could possibly work. And back then it was constant. This was before the whole Firestone deal. The economy fell out and poured forward, all that garbage. But, you know, I was working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It wasn't bringing home squat. And I finally looked at it, started paying attention to it, and cut back on overtime for 2 weeks. I actually made more money per week by working less hours. And it was just mind-boggling to me how much of that goes on every day. And then, of course, like you said, the bonuses, the vacation checks, things like that. It's amazing. And then you get to your employer and you do all of this stuff. Uncle Sam's going to screw you. If your employer don't like you, they're going to screw you because it's an at-will state. They have to have no reason to get rid of you. I mean, where is the employee repercussions? You can't sue your employer when they get rid of your employer.
This is, you know, the last bit before, because we're on overdrive. But, you know, when I was a kid, I was like a senior in high school. I got a job working at a very famous local grocery store that's nationwide now.
Mm-hmm.
And they had just gone union. And I joined, you know, I signed up, and back, and I don't know if they still have it, but they had, you know, Reagan had what they called the teenager overtime. Teenager minimum wage. It was like $2.50 an hour.
Right.
The standard minimum wage was like $3.35.
Right.
So I'm making $2.50 an hour as a stock clerk at a grocery store. And then I have to pay minimum $25 a week to the union, or paycheck to the union. So I work 10 hours a week because I was in high school. I work 10 hours a week, and I get my first check, and my dad said, screw this, you're not working there anymore. Because you got to pay $25 union dues. You know, you made $50. The government took 10 in taxes.
Yep.
You paid $25 to the union. So, effectively, you made $15 for 2 weeks' work.
That cost that much more to
work. You made $50. And back then, you know, gas was effectively much higher than it is now. So, it cost my family for me to have a job. Oh,
right.
I was so mad.
Right. No, I totally get it.
And
that's the way it is. It's even worse
than
that.
When I asked, I said, you know, because I went in and talked to the manager, and I said, do I really have to pay this? And they went, yep. And I went to the union steward, and I went, do I really have to pay this? And the union steward said, well, you know, we all voted it in. And I'm like, yeah, but what are you going to do for me? I'm not a full-time employee, and I have to pay.
Right.
To me, it was a scam.
It was personally, and it still is.
I was a part-time employee, so I didn't have any union coverage anyway. But I'm paying I'm paying union dues.
Right.
And I was furious. But that's an argument for another day. Some union environment, some collective bargaining environments are good, and some collective bargaining environments are just a ripoff. And I'll probably end up with a, you know, bomb under my car if I talk about it too much. But
well, you need to check.
I
take one all the time. Go ahead.
You know, do you have any? What's coming up next week? Real quick. Last roll. What do you got coming up next week at Louisville Politics?
Well, I'm really curious to, on Monday, I really want to get into the George Zimmerman stuff, and I'll tell you why. They're going to have the closing arguments tomorrow, or they should have started today, and I believe the defense is making their closing arguments tomorrow. I don't think this jury is going to take that long to make a decision. I really don't. So I'm going to play Monday by ear, but I'll tell you where I really want to go into, though, with this Ford Motor Company whistleblower lawsuit. We've got LDG Development right here in Louisville. I've withheld the second part of that story because I'm trying to work with Senate investigators right now. So there's going to be a few surprises. I'm not really going to go into a lot of detail of what we're going into next week, but there will be a few surprises next week to blow people's minds.
Oh, awesome. And Let's see. Who's your special guest on Monday?
Nah, nobody.
No.
Not this week. I postponed that until I can finish this investigation I'm doing. I don't want to bring this particular guest on just yet. I'm trying not to say too much here because the investigation is ongoing and I really, really want to protect it. I'll get this guest on in the very near future. But for right now, Ed Martin always co-hosts on Monday and Tuesday nights, and we'll just do what we do, man.
We got King coming in on Sunday night, and you know, for a soft-spoken guy, he does one heck of a show. So if you're still listening, listen to Ken on Sunday, pick up Ed Monday and Tuesday. You got who's doing Wednesday now?
I'm still doing Wednesday. I'm on air Monday and until
Dale breaks up with his girlfriend, I'm on Thursdays.
Yeah, if Dale's listening to this, give me a call, my friend. I want to make sure everything's going okay. He has had a lot on his plate, and hopefully he's got most of it worked out, and he'll get back soon. But good luck. Thanks, Rob, for covering. I appreciate it. And I'm getting out of here, man. Okay. Have a great night.
All right, you have a good one. And everybody listening, thanks for putting up with us. Thanks for putting up with Overdrive. If you have any questions or comments, Shoot us an email at myviewmatters@aol.com. Visit the website. You can drop a comment right there on one of the articles or shoot us an email off the About page. Until next week, I'm Rob and with Dale's Thursday Night Truth, and hopefully next week I'll actually be able to talk straight. See you next week.